Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you with us. Talking about protecting trees and shrubs from winter burn on the show today. And our guest is Laura Jell. She's an associate professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. So, what would you like to know about getting your plants and trees through winter? If you have questions about trees, shrubs, or vines, love to hear from you. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And if you've got a photo you want to email us, why, you can enclose that as well. Laura Jell, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. Good to be back.
You know, before we talk winter burn, what ideas do you have for recycling those Christmas trees?
Well, I'm glad you asked that because my neighbors probably think I'm kooky. I've been going around in the neighborhood and actually dragging their Christmas trees that they put on the curb to my house. And I use them for a number of things. One, to keep my dog out of certain areas. Two, I can always cut some of the branches and use them on top of perennials for a little bit of added winter protection. And then, of course, I can also have them, the trees in my yard, the Christmas trees, are a wonderful place for birds to build a nest, or if they haven't, I'm sure they already have, but if they're trying to find a place just for resting out of the wind, also for other animals. And then, of course, later on in the winter, I cut up the logs, and I use them in my fireplace, and they smell terrific.
That is a good idea, Laura.
Oh, they're wonderful. They're, you know, dried out. They're perfect, and they create the most aromatic fire in your fireplace.
Oh, I tell you what, I always hate to drag the tree out of the house because it smells so great when it's in there for about 6 weeks or whatever. And so that's a way to make that tree keep working for you a bit.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So let's talk about winter burn for a bit here. What is it and what plants are affected?
Well, winter burn is it's a problem sometimes with evergreens and broadleaf evergreens like rhododendrons. Needleleaf evergreens, especially dwarf Alberta spruce, yews, hemlock, and some others are prone to this. And what it is, it's an environmental problem. It's not an insect or disease. And they're grown in unprotected locations, and they're exposed to severe winter conditions such as winter wind and winter sun that dries out the foliage because the ground is frozen. It can't uptake water at all in the winter when the ground's frozen, and the foliage just desiccates. It just dries it out. And this doesn't happen to all evergreens, of course, but there's a few plants in particular, especially yews and dwarf Alberta spruce in boxwoods, that are just super susceptible to it. And it really should be planted in a proper location to avoid it, such as out of the winter sun, out of the winter wind. So preferably on a northeastern or eastern side of a home or building, out of those drying winds. And in terms of what you can do about it, not much. After it happens, you will see it. I've got a fact sheet on the internet on winter burn, and it's available on the UW-Madison Horticulture Extension website. And that is web address, is hort, H-O-R-T, period, extension, E-X-T-E-N-S-I-O-N, period, WISC.edu. And you'll see the little search magnifying glass at the top of the right of the screen. You click on that and you type in winter burn, and you'll see my publication.
And we also have a link to that on our program notes on today's show at ideas@wpr.org/Larry. But go ahead, Laura.
Sure, no problem. So that's what causes a winter burn. How do you save a plant? Well, that brown material you see in April, May, especially on the side of the tree that's facing winter sun and winter winds on those particular plants, it's not going to green back up. It's dead leaves. So those leaves will come off. And because of that, it really makes your plants look pretty bad because you have this gaping hole on the side of the plant facing the sun. And what some people do is they use, first of all, plant the plant in the right place. And then you can also, for next year, won't help for, and actually you can still do it now, is you would use burlap, canvas, snow fencing, or other protective material to create barriers that will help protect the plant. And you don't want to wrap them like a mummy. You don't want it tightly wrapped, as that will is prone to collecting ice and trap moisture, making the plants more susceptible to disease-causing organism. So what I do is I'll have 4 to 5 foot tall stakes. Doesn't have to be that big, depending on how big your plant is. But you want to block off an entire plant. You put those stakes in the ground, and then you wrap those stakes surrounding the plant with burlap. So it goes all the way around the stakes, not the actual plant. But you want them fairly close to the plant. I'd say at least, 6 to 8 inches away. And you put that material with the burlap around those stakes, but leave the top open. Don't enclose it because the plants do need sunlight, and also it can collect moisture and collapse, especially if we get a heavy snow. And so these barriers basically deflect the wind and protect the plants from direct exposure to the sun and drying winds. And then in the spring, you remove it.
Yeah. You know, right along with this, Phoebe emailed that to prevent deer defoliation or winter burn, a neighbor had suggested that she wrap her 6-foot arborvita in burlap. And that doesn't sound like the right way to do it.
No.
Would that fencing help on deer, do you think?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But if it's short enough, the deer can reach over that burlap. And so for that situation, when you're trying to keep deer out, maybe perhaps on the top you put on exposed chicken wire so that there's no burlap going over the top, but the deer can't reach the foliage by something like chicken wire or secured in place.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, you don't want to be wrapping the plant tightly. They don't need that. In fact, you can cause more damage. I've seen with plants that were wrapped super tight.
You know, as you were talking, I was thinking about maybe the last time you were on, it might have been fall or whenever, but the whole business of watering those plants right up till, freezing is really, really critical. And we could be seeing the ill effects of not doing that right about now or soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Watering your plants until the ground is frozen, especially newly planted material. And newly planted material can be stuff that you planted in spring. It's still not, especially with woody plants, they're not, what's the word I'm looking for? They're just new transplants. They haven't developed a good root system yet to adequately uptake water. Another thing you can do is use mulch around the base of the plant, avoiding the trunk of the plant. Do not pile mulch up against a tree or shrub because that does even more damage, especially it's an inviting home for critters to overwinter in, and they'll chew on the bark of the shrubs in the tree. So we do have fact sheets also on the Hort website about mulching, proper mulching. And so you want to keep it at least several inches from the base the trunk, I should say, of the plant. But you want no more than a couple inches of mulch. You can use wood chips, work very well, as does bark chips. And it helps insulate the soil. It helps reduce water loss and helps to moderate temperatures a bit. And also, of course, prevents weed seeds from germinating.
Laura Gell, our guest today, as we talk about preventing winter burn on your trees and shrubs. And, of course, we'll take all of your questions in that area. Call us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or go ahead and email us. The email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Jill Nadeau is our producer today. Tyler Dinner, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here as we talk about trees and shrubs, preventing winter burn, and taking questions about trees and shrubs. I hope you and ornamentals. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Our guest, Laura Gell, extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. Great to have her with us. By the way, we're partnering with UW-Madison's Extension Horticulture Program to learn more about your experiences listening to Garden Talk. Love to find out what you learned during the show and how you'll put it to good use, as well as your ideas for future Garden Talk topics. To do that, just go to WPR.org/Larry and click on today's show note for a link. And it'll just take you a couple of minutes, and we would really, really appreciate it. Sandy in Madison called, couldn't stay on the phone. She didn't get marsh hay around her azaleas this year because she was waiting for the ground to freeze. Is it too late now? She has chicken wire cages around them.
What was the plant again? I'm sorry, I missed that.
Oh, sorry, azaleas.
Azaleas. Well, hopefully it's one of the hardy azaleas, because the ones you buy in the greenhouse, sometimes at Christmas time or even Easter, those aren't hardy here, and those won't survive the winter. The ones that are totally hardy here are the Northern Light Series azaleas that were bred in Minnesota. There's also some other ones. One of my favorites is Jane Abbott. Jane, and then the second word is Abbott, A-B-B-O-T. And that's a fuchsia pink one. That's one, it's just splendid in bloom.
Pretty.
But, yeah, oh, it's gorgeous. I have them in my yard, and I absolutely love them. And the question was regarding, mulching?
She didn't get her marsh, she usually puts marsh hay around her azaleas,
right.
But she didn't get them in this year. And wonders if it's too late now. And she does have chicken wire around them, cages.
Okay, yep, that keeps the animals away, hopefully. You can actually still mulch them. You would probably clear the snow away from the plants and then put down your marsh hay. If that's too much of a pain, you can wait. You know, hopefully we'll get some warmer weather and melt some of the snow before it gets cold again. Another thing, though, I want to really emphasize the importance of snow. I am a big advocate of having snow on the ground all winter, and here's why. Snow is an excellent insulator. It insulates the ground. It insulates the plants. It's amazing. I never thought it was that big of a deal until I used to have a blue holly on the side of the house here, and we had a big snowfall. And this was a couple years ago, and half the plant was underneath the snow, and the other half was above the snow. Now, granted, this is a broadleaf evergreen. I had it in the most protected place around my house. It was facing north. It was protected around some plants, and lo and behold, in the spring, when the snow melted, the top half of the plant that was not covered in snow most of the winter had some winter burn, but the foliage that was in the snow, underneath the snow, was totally green. And it's just like, wow, Mother Nature, she's great.
Oh, man. Well, Jerry in Dakota, Minnesota has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Jerry. Thanks for calling.
Oh, well, thank you for being there, both of you. I've got a large white pine in my yard, and I usually rake up the dead pine needles that drop off the tree. I didn't this year, and just, you know, below the tree is all kinds of pine needles. Should I have raked those needles up, or I was kind of thinking that maybe it's a good idea for me to leave the needles there, and I did, of course, because it would provide insulation and maybe moisture to the, you know, to the tree.
Sure.
Keep the tree moist.
Yeah, I have a big white pine in my yard, too, and I never rake the needles. The needles are excellent mulch, and they fall on the ground. Some get in the lawn. I'll cut the lawn, and it chops them up. But the stuff that's directly underneath the tree on my berm, I just leave it. It's free mulch, and it breaks down, you know, fairly quickly over the course of the whole summer. So, yeah, I would leave it. There's no reason why to rake it.
All right. There you go, Jerry. A listener emailed, he brings his hibiscus inside each winter and then puts it back out in spring through late fall. Can he prune it now while it's inside for the winter? It still blooms while indoors, but is, you know, it's spindly now and could use a cutting back.
I would wait until the time when you're about to take it outside, only because I've seen some people drastically prune their hibiscus, and then there's no leaves left. And that's a living plant, and it's not going to – it will send out new leaves indoors, but not many. And I'm just a little leery of cutting it back heavily until you're just about to put it back outside. And at that time, you can prune, and you're putting it outside in May, and by then, you know, it'll start regrowing very quickly.
And while we're on the topic of pruning, you mentioned, I know many times on the show, that winter's a good time to prune many
yep.
trees and shrubs.
Yep.
What's the best time frame?
I always say when it's warm enough that you can bear the cold.
Yeah.
I really like, you know, winter to late, especially late winter, when it's a little bit more warmer out. So say March, April, before it leaves out is a good time to prune, as well as now. And again, when it comes to shrubs, sometimes you have to wait because there's so much snow there, you can't get inside the plant and do proper pruning. For trees, right now is a great time, all the way up until before bud break. And I suggest you, if you're pruning any trees, our audience out there, if anybody's pruning larger trees, I would actually refer them to hire a certified arborist. And it's just so dangerous pruning, getting up on a ladder with a chainsaw and trying to prune your own trees. It's not worth your life. I suggest hiring an arborist. I don't get any money for recommending them, and I can't recommend a specific arborist, but what I can do is refer you to the Wisconsin Arborist Association website. And the Wisconsin Arborist Association website is nice and short and sweet. It's waaisa.org. So it's waaisa.org, and no spaces in there. And the page will come up, and right on the front page to the bottom left, you will see Find an Arborist. And you click on that link, and what happens is you get a page that opens and says, Find an ISA certified arborist. And I highly recommend you get a certified arborist, because there's a lot of people out there, landscapers or whoever, guy down the street, that call themselves tree trimmers. And if they don't have the proper training, they could potentially do harm to your trees. And there's a very specific guidelines of how to properly prune. I do have fact sheets on the Wisconsin Extension Horticulture website that I mentioned earlier. And that's about, you know, how to do proper pruning cuts, how to prune your shrubs, how to prune your evergreens. So I suggest you take a look at that. If it's not a tree, big tree, that is, if it's a little tree, you can do it yourself. But please make sure you follow the proper pruning guidelines, because you can cause a lot of damage to trees by flush cutting, meaning you're cutting the branch flush with the trunk. You never want to do that. There's a proper three-point method of properly pruning larger branches, and the fact sheet that I have tells you about that. But other than that, the larger trees, I would just refer to a certified arborist. And on the Wisconsin Arborist Association website, you can search by your county or location, and you'll see a list of certified arborists that come up, and contact one of them. Though a lot of them probably have their pruning schedules already pretty tight for this year, but you never know. There could be an opening.
I've used them in the past, and man, that's money well spent.
Oh, yes.
Money and, very and, well spent.
Yeah, and some people say, oh, they're so expensive. It's like, do you know how much their insurance is?
Yeah.
Liability insurance is very, very expensive. And I heard once that the second or third most dangerous job in America was commercial arborists. And it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah.
That's why you hire professionals that know what they're doing and practice safe pruning practices.
Let's go to Janet in Madison next. Hi, Janet. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I bought the cutest lavender plant from Costco. It's about 20 inches tall. 10 of it is like a little trunk. And then the remaining top 10 inches is a fluffy ball. And it had great blossoms when I bought it. The blossoms eventually died, and I sheared off the plant, gave it a little haircut. I brought it in for winter, and it's doing fine. But I'm wondering if you have tips on two things. One, just getting it through winter. I'll put it back outside, you know, as the weather gets warmer. But it never got blossoms again, and I would sure like to see that happen. Any advice?
Yeah, well, first of all, do you know what cultivar or variety it is?
Ooh, shucks.
Of lavender? Because some are actually cold hardy.
Oh.
And
I do not.
Okay, that's all right. You don't want to stick it outside now. It's too late. The ones that are hardy, and there's only a few that are really hardy. One is called Super Blue. There's a whole bunch of them. But the problem with, not a problem, but they only flower during a period of time in the summer. And that's it. Getting them to rebloom indoors is difficult, very difficult. And so it probably will not rebloom inside, though some people will say, oh, mine's in bloom now. And, you know, there's exceptions, of course. But the best, it's resting right now. And the best thing to do is put it in a sunny window. Don't overwater it. Lavender root rots easily if you overwater it. Don't let it sit in water. You know, water it thoroughly in a sink and put it in your window and let the surface of the soil get dry between waterings. You don't want it bone dry or it will drop its leaves, but you don't want to keep it wet at all. And then in the spring, gradually bring it into higher light conditions. Same with hibiscus. The former gentleman on the phone mentioned his hibiscus. So you want to gradually increase the amount of sunlight the plant gives. You don't want to stick it immediately out in the sun because you can burn the foliage. It hasn't been acclimated to higher light conditions. So by doing that, you know, stick it outside in the morning where it's in shade, and then gradually increase the amount of time that it's exposed to sunny conditions. But you want to do this over several weeks. You don't want to just do it in a couple days. And then you can put it in the sunniest spot outside in the spring, and
way you go,
will probably rebloom.
Janet, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Dave in Broadhead, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for having your show. I appreciate it. I've got a question. I've got a bunch of mock orange bushes, and they tend to have canes that die back on a regular basis, and these things are huge. I'm wondering, number one, do they die back on a regular schedule like every other year, biennial kind of thing? And then the other thing is, how far can I prune them back if I want to cut them down? The same thing, I've got a couple of bridal wreaths that I wonder the same thing. I mean, how much can you cut them back without really killing them?
Okay, good question. With the mock orange, they're notorious for having dead twigs in them. It's frustrating because they're so beautiful in bloom. There are some newer mock oranges that I think are better. I planted one in our courtyard at UW, and I'm trying to think of the name of it. It's an upright one, very atypical form for a mock orange. With pruning mock orange, if you prune now, you're potentially cutting off live wood that then would flower in beginning of June, at least here in Madison. I'm not sure where you're located. So if you do pruning now, you might be cutting into live wood, and you don't want to do that. You just want to remove the dead stuff. And a way that I get around, you know, and you can always scratch the stems to see if it's green underneath. If it's not and it's dry, then, yeah, you can prune it. And I would take that upright shoot, and I'd prune it all the way back to the ground. Now, another way of finding out if it's live or dead is you wait until spring, and you see where the buds will break. And sometimes it doesn't until mid-May. And then you can look at the wood, determine which wood is alive and which is dead. And the stuff that's dead, again, you would cut it back all the way to the base of the plant. Now, with bridal wreath spirea, that's a different story. Bridal wreath spirea is a beautiful plant in bloom. It's gorgeous. And so many people prune them, and they really should not be pruned heavily. They are called bridal wreath spirea because they have this long arching branches, and all along those branches will be flowers. They should never be sheared. You're cutting off the flowers, and that's kind of the whole point of growing the plant. And so with bridal wreath spirea, I would only prune if you see a dead branch in it. It usually doesn't have a lot of dead branches in it. And again, if you're pruning it right now, you're cutting off the flower buds because it blooms at the end of May. So I would, you can prune now, just realize you're sacrificing your blooms for this coming spring.
There you go, Dave. Thank you so much. You can join in too. We have open lines. Get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. And of course, always email us to ideas@wpr.org. Mary from Duluth, Minnesota, emailed. She has a long-time burning question regarding what happens below ground when you trim shrubs long-term. There are shrubs hundreds of years old in some places, and she's concerned about the effects on foundations, septic lines, etc., of those roots.
Okay, it's kind of a two-pointed question. Pruning, it does not harm the roots of a tree, first of all.
Yeah.
Second of all, if it's a tree, it needs to be far away from your house as possible. Because tree roots, in fact, I had a neighbor that did this. I was like, oh, why are you doing this? They planted a magnolia smack dab right next to their house.
Ooh.
And, you know, magnolias get big.
Yeah.
And those roots are not aggressive on magnolia, but on some species, like birches, of course, any poplar or willow, the roots are very aggressive and can ruin foundations. Same with silver maple, for example. So you want to keep trees at least 20 feet or more away from your house, big trees. When it comes to ruining foundations, yeah, if you're planting a big tree that is super close to your house, it can very much ruin your foundation. But shrubs should not ruin your foundation. They're pretty shallow rooted, and the roots are fine. They're not the big heavy roots that bust up concrete and ruin your basement.
All right.
Trees.
A listener emailed to ask if there's any way to save or help trees that have been rubbed by buck deer.
Good question. I take it this is after the fact.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not much you can do now. And, you know, people grab the tree paint or wound compound. Please don't do that. That stuff is not needed unless you're actually pruning a plant, in particular oaks and elms, during the growing season, which you shouldn't prune oaks and elms in the growing season. Those in particular need to be pruned after November 30th or November 15th, but it's getting warmer in November, so I kind of mentioned December for oaks and elms. that's the only time we recommend the tree paint or wound compound is if a branch breaks or if it's hanging on an oak or elm during the growing season. You do a cut and you immediately put tree paint or wound compound over it to prevent the picnic beetle from carrying a Dutch elm disease, oak wilt. The oak wilt fungus is on the insect's body, and so you don't want it, and they're attracted to fresh wounds. For elms, the elm bark beetle is attracted also to fresh wounds, and again, you immediately treat that cut stem if it's in the growing season. If it's in winter, those insects are not active, and that's why we recommend just waiting until that time of year to prune them. For other plants, we don't recommend that tree paint or wound compound at all. It's useless. It actually can slow down wound closure, and we're not trying to do that. So
if you've got a tree that's been, if it's been rubbed all the way around, that's a big problem. What if you've got it maybe a third or a quarter of the way around?
Yes, what will happen is the tree will try to compartmentalize that wound, and it will slowly develop wound wood, which surrounds the wound or buck rub area, and it will eventually, over a course of years, close that wound. Wounds don't heal. The plant produces callus tissue that will then slowly enclose it. You can always, if it's rough edged, you can make a nice clean cut on the edges if it's jagged. But other than that, you need to leave it alone and let Mother Nature do its course.
Catherine called to ask for shrubs that stay green but are not susceptible to winter burn.
Well, shrubs. I've even seen winter burn on junipers. And I've never seen that before. With climate change, we're seeing these drastic shifts in weather where it can be very sunny and warm in winter. I remember one year I was sitting outside on Valentine's Day because it was 65 degrees. And then a couple days later, it got down below zero. And because of those massive fluxes in temperature, everything could get winter burn, technically, if it's certain plants are more. That's why deciduous plants that lose their leaves every year, they don't winter burn. But for evergreens, there are some cultivars. And again, if you go to the fact sheet that I did on winter burn, I'm trying to remember if I list some evergreens on there. No, I don't. but if you want to know, some cultivars of arborvitae, some can winter burn, some don't. It really depends on how big of a plant you want. Some of the bigger ones, like Techne, is a good one. Nigra is another good one. But those are big shrubs. Some of the little ones, again, if there's snow protecting it, it's safe. But again, with arborvitae, you don't want to be piling all the snow on top because you can break branches. So there are some junipers that are better for winter burn protection. I know some people don't like junipers, but they do serve a function. And some of the Chinese junipers are good plants to have. But Nothing is foolproof.
Nothing is foolproof. Laura Jell, our guest today, she's an associate professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. You can join in, too. Open lines get you on pretty quickly. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or go ahead and email us your question, and maybe you've got a plant photo that you want to ask about as well. Go to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Laura Jell, Associate Professor and Extension Specialist for Woody Ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. Woody Ornamental question, I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's go back to the phones. Mary in Madison is online next, so let's go there. Hi, Mary.
Hi, good morning. I have a question about an oak tree. I don't know if it's normal for an oak tree to put out sprouts from the base in the spring. This oak tree is it's been in the ground about 6 years. It was a bald and burlap oak, a nice specimen. But the last several years, it puts out these suckers, I guess you'd call them, and quite a few of them. And it seems to me that's not a good sign. It has a good canopy. The leaves are green. The bark looks a little loose to me, but, you know.
It's a white oak, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a white oak. They have weird bark anyway, but. So it seemed to me if the other oak trees don't put up these suckers, and I'm thinking maybe it's telling us it's trying to reproduce before it dies or something.
Okay, very good question. When I hear, you know, oaks and suckering at the base of a white oak, that tells me the plant or the tree was planted too deep in the ground, and that root flare is buried in the ground. You don't see it. The tree is going into the ground like a telephone pole. And the plant responds. I mean, the roots need oxygen. Granted, the roots definitely should be below the ground, but where it is placed, that root flare and those roots need to be near the soil surface. They're covered, the roots are, but the base of the plant itself, the actual flare where you see the trunk flaring at the bottom out to the roots, that needs to be placed right at the soil line. And it's sending up suckers because, first of all, it's basically, in a way, gasping for air. And those suckers are produced near the base of the tree that's been planted too deep. Now, granted, there are trees that naturally sucker. I mean, we see that in crab apples all the time. And that's just something they do, but if they're grafted. But with oaks, when I see suckers at the base, that tells me there's a serious problem below the ground. And a way to, you know, get away with that is, first of all, how heavy is it mulched? Is the mulch touching the trunk of the tree?
Right. It is now, and I can kind of dig that out in the spring, I guess.
Yeah, that's one thing. And the other thing is, because it's already planted and you're probably not going to be able to, if it was like a year old in the ground, I would suggest digging the plant up and getting it to where that root flare is at the soil line. But since it's been in the ground, the other way you can help and really would improve this tree is to get a certified arborist to do what's called air spade excavation. And it's a... you don't have access to this, but they do. And it's a device that it's a long pole and it's hooked up to a compressor that blasts compressed air around the root system, but it's not hurting the roots. What it's doing is it's kicking off the soil and mulch around the base of the tree to where they can actually start to see that root flare. And sometimes it's 6 to 8 inches deep inside a root ball. That's why with ball and burlap trees, you need to be taking this top of the soil off of that root ball until you start to see the actual root flare. And this is the most common cause of early tree decline, is planting them too deep. I know there's a lot of controversy out there, but I take the wire basket off. I start with the bottom of the basket first before it goes in the hole. Then I stick my hand or a tool into the actual top of the root ball next to the trunk to determine where the root flare is. And I measure that. It's, you know, you can easily do that with your hand or a screwdriver works really well. And as soon as you start to feel, you know, by placing it into the top of the root ball, you start to feel that where that root flare is, then you have to adjust the depth of the planting hole so that it's not, that root flare is at the soil line after you're done planting. And that often entails scraping the inches of soil off the top of the root ball and so you can expose it. I remove the burlap. I don't see any use for it in the ground. Some people leave it on, but I take it off. And that way you can get the roots in contact directly with the soil that's there. You don't want to amend the soil unless you're planting a large bed. You can do more harm with amending the soil with peat moss or anything else going back into the hole. You don't want to do that. You want to use existing soil. And choosing appropriate plants for the type of soil you have is very important.
Mm. Mary, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Gene in Abbotsford, it's your turn. Hi, Gene.
Hello. How are you today?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I was in the building when they were talking about magnolias when I came out. And I have a magnolia tree that is about 6-7 years. No, it's about 7 years old, I think. It's about 10 feet tall, maybe not quite that high. But it buds out all the time, and the blossoms never open.
Mm.
Do you know what kind of magnolia you have?
Oh, I wish I did.
What color are the flowers?
Pink, coral. Pink and white,
okay.
Kind of. And they're
and
huge
did you get buds. This, did you get this from a local nursery?
I got it from a mail order. I don't know if which one it was. My husband was alive at the time and sending in orders about every other day. So,
okay. The reason why I mention this is, first of all, we need to determine if it's actually a cold hardy cultivar or species of magnolia. Because some of these mail orders, they sell stuff that may or may not be cold hardy in Wisconsin. That's why, you know, I'm not, again, don't get any kickback for recommending a specific grower, but I like buying my stuff locally. And that way, you know, it's grown by that person, or the garden center could always, you know, get it from a California source. But they're only going to be traditionally, and hopefully they're only selling stuff that's going to be hardier. The second one is if the flowers are, they're not fully open and they turn brown. Is that what you're saying?
They don't open it. The buds don't open at all.
Okay. Because if the flowers started opening and then they turn brown, that's an indication of frost damage. And that's why we recommend planting magnolias on the eastern location so that they can delay flowering sometimes by a week compared to the very same plant on the south side or west side of a building where they warm up faster and they bloom almost a week earlier than the same plant on the eastern side of a house. And we always have late spring frosts. And that's I know it's so frustrating. I have a magnolia too, and some years when it doesn't flower, it's very aggravating. But since the buds aren't open at all, the plant, does it leaf out?
Not until, it does leaf out, but not until the buds start to they try to open, but they just can't make it. Does the amount of moisture that they get have anything to do with it?
Well, if the ground is moist, it should leaf out, and that's why I'm leaning more towards, I wonder if this tree is a non-cold hardy cultivar. That's one thing. Second thing, you don't notice any damage at the base of the tree, like girdling from animals?
No, no. It was okay. Zone 4 when we ordered it, so I would think that Zone 4 would be adequate.
Well, that's the problem with mail order nurseries. They tend to over-exaggerate the hardiness zone. It drives me absolutely nuts. And even big box stores, they'll get stuff in that really isn't cold hardy for us here in Wisconsin. But that doesn't help your problem. Take a picture of the plant as well as the leaves, which actually aren't there, obviously, right now, but in the spring. And I'd really like to determine what the plant is exactly and what's going on. Magnolias are very susceptible to magnolia scale, and magnolia scale is lethal. And what it looks like is you'll get these little bumps all along the stems of magnolias. And it's a dead insect, that is the female. And the female lays its eggs on the branches and then forms a hard or semi-hard shell on top. And the female dies, but underneath her are still all those eggs. In the spring, the eggs will hatch, and the crawlers, the little individual tiny insects, will come out, and they will suck the sap out of the plant. And they can really cause a lot of damage. That weakens the tree, and the flowers won't bloom. That's how I knew mine was in trouble a couple years ago, and I've been having it treated quite nicely by a company here in Madison with a several approach using dormant oil, which smothers the eggs. Actually, it smothers the mother that died on the plant, and the eggs are smothered too. Second of all is using growth retardants on those crawlers. Another approach is using a systemic insecticide specifically for magnolia scale or scale insects in general. It's not a one and done. You're going to need to, again, determine if you even have it. And that's where pictures come in handy.
All right. There you go, Gene. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Danetza in Madison, your turn. Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I would like to ask you, I bought a property 1 year ago, and I see here is so many jumping worms. And yes. I was watching the whole year, what is going on? And I will say that they made pretty much damage everywhere around my house. And I have big property in front, in back, and back is going to woods almost. But all my neighbors, they are gardening and a gardener. And when I ask them, they even don't know about jumping worms. Yes, and here is a lot of animals, dogs around, and et cetera. And I know that people are actually sharing these plants and eggs of these worms.
This is a problem.
Yeah, huge problem. Jumping worms are not native, and they can cause a lot of damage. One of the things they do is it changes the soil structure into basically coffee ground-like structure. And they're eating the organic matter, the jumping worms are. Our regular earthworms are not the same. We do have a fact sheet on jumping worms at the horticulture website, extension website that I mentioned earlier. Again, hort.extension.wisc.edu. And there is one on jumping worms. I'm looking at it right now on my computer. And there is more sources as well on the DNR fact sheet. Actually, the DNR fact sheet is very good. That covers jumping worms. I'm not an expert on jumping worms, but there is some great information on the Wisconsin DNR website. Just Google Wisconsin DNR jumping worms, and they have some prevention and management. It says remove the jumping worms when you see them, because each one can produce a lot more jumping worms. And
yeah,
there's really no treatment of stuff you can put in the soil at this time. It's really unfortunate. I'm praying I never get it myself, because it's awful.
It's awful indeed. Danetsa, good luck with those websites. Appreciate it very much. We're partnering with UW-Madison's Extension Hort Program to learn more about your experiences listening to Garden Talk. Love to have you to learn what you've learned during the show and how you'll put it to good use, as well as we'd like your ideas for future Garden Talk topics. To do that, just go to WPR.org/Larry and click on today's show note for a link. It just will take a couple of minutes to fill out that short questionnaire, and we would really, really appreciate it. So WPR.org/Larry. That's the place to go and look for the link. Laura Jell, Associate Professor and Extension Specialist for Woody Ornamentals. Our guest, I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining in today with my guest, Laura Jell, Associate Professor and Extension Specialist for Woody Ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. So what questions do you have for Laura about shrubs, trees, or vines? I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234. Or you can email us your questions, and if you want to include a photo with that question, why, please feel free to do that to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. And open lines, by the way, get you on pretty quickly. Here's Dave and Nina with a question. Let's go there. Dave, hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. A landscaper planted some variegated willow bushes about 20 feet behind our house, and they are very, very woody shrubs that tend to spread fairly rapidly and get very, very tall. What's the best way of trimming or pruning them or controlling their size?
You said it's a variegated willow?
A variegated willow bush, multiple small trunks.
Yeah, they get big. does it have like pink and white splashes on the leaves? Looks like
it does.
You know, some.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. You have the variegated. My brain is foggy today. I was trying to think of the common name. Kuro-Nishiki is the cultivar, and it's called the dappled willow. And that one, it's, you know, when I moved into my house, I had one in my yard, and after about a year, I got rid of it. They grow so tall and lanky. They easily can get 10 feet tall. They're not little. And in terms of pruning, because it's a willow, you can actually do this type of pruning where you're actually cutting the plant back pretty drastically to the ground. You can always leave a couple branches there. But what will happen, and I don't recommend this type of pruning for very many plants at all. In fact, you can kill a lot of plants by cutting it all the way back. But you leave a little bit of the wood above the ground. So you're cutting back to 6 inches above the ground. And what will happen is it will send up all these new shoots that will be very beautiful and variegated in the spring. And then do that every couple years just to keep it a little bit smaller, because they do tend to get very tall and lanky.
There you go, Dave. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Nada, is this a good time of the year to prune lilac?
Well, it depends. If you prune lilacs now, which always winter, early spring is a great time to prune, because you can get in there and remove the largest diameter branches back to the base of the plant. And it, depending on which lilac. Now, if you have Paladin lilac or Miss Kim lilac, you don't need to do that. But for the big French lilacs, the ones that are, you know, get 10 feet tall or so, that's the type of pruning you do. Remove the largest diameter branches, about a third of them, back to the base of the plant every couple of years. And what that does is encourages suckers to come up, and those suckers will eventually produce new flowers. And the flowers will be at the same level as your nose, and that's always a good thing with lilac. However, if you are pruning right now, just be aware you're removing potential flowers. And so they always say wait until after it's done flowering. You can do that, or you can do it now. Just realize you are sacrificing some of the blooms. I personally prune mine in the winter, and that's just because I can get in there, I can see which branches are really big, and also because the doggone mosquitoes aren't out.
Yeah.
And I can prune without them, you know, getting in my way. But realize you are sacrificing some blooms.
But not all of them.
Or you can wait till after. No, not all of them.
And you don't have any mosquito bites when you're done.
Yeah, really. And I do have fact sheets on the Wisconsin Horticulture Extension website. Again, the hort.extension.wisc.edu. And if you type in pruning shrubs, I talk about how to properly prune many shrubs. And the types of pruning, there's thinning pruning, there's rejuvenation pruning, there's deadheading, and there's several different types, and I describe them all in the fact sheet.
Let's go to Ted in Spooner. Ted, hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I was listening to earlier about the oak tree with a new shoot shooting out up the stalk. I got an oak tree. It's an older tree, and I put in the hunting shack down here and put the driveway in right close to it. Because that, and you said the oak tree doesn't get air because the root mound. Will that driveway being too close will do the same?
How close is it?
Well, within 2 feet.
Oh.
Yikes. How long ago was the tree planted, and how long ago did you put in the driveway?
Well, the tree is originally in the woods.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's about 14 inches across.
Oh, that's a big
and
one, yeah.
And the driveway's been there 11 years.
Oh, long time. Okay. We usually don't recommend that because when you're putting the driveway in, you're compacting the soil, and that depletes oxygen from those roots. Now, is the rest of the root system open to the woods? It's not being constricted by anything?
No.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. That's good because those roots are, you know, they have the good soil, they have the oxygen in the ground, they're not compacted. So anytime you're running heavy equipment and paving especially, over the ground next to a tree, whether it's oak or any other tree, you are causing damage. It's unfortunate, you know, it's been 11 years and not going to do much now. How does the tree look? Is it leafing out okay?
Well, it's slowly dying. One died earlier, so.
Yeah, if it's slowly dying, that's the cause. You're probably cut roots as well as compacted the soil. Oaks are very sensitive to construction. Any type of compaction of the soil with heavy equipment or, you know, depleting the oxygen, it's unfortunate. But, I call a certified arborist, have them, he or her, come and look at your tree to determine if it's at a point where it can be saved. There might be some treatments they can do to help the tree, but it'd be sad to lose a big tree like that.
Yeah, it sure would. Ted, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in, too. Open lines get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. And a couple of emails that contain pictures, and I know, Laura, you can see those photos. Mary emailed, she got a shrub with her house and wonders what the heck it is. And if she should trim it or when she should trim it.
Actually, I'm looking at a tree right now. You guys sent me a couple emails. Is this referring to the emails you sent me?
Yeah, there's a photo of a tree, but just above that photo, there should be a photo of a shrub. Maybe you don't have that. Well, let's look at that tree. It's a 125-year-old pine in southern Minnesota. It was damaged by high winds on December 15th. The bark was peeled off in long strips, but the tree wasn't split or broken. Wondering if it's going to heal.
Okay, yeah, I do have that email. I'm looking at the tree. It looks like it's a conifer. I can't quite tell which conifer it is.
She says it's a pine, but I don't, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a spruce, but I could be wrong. Again, I don't have pictures of the foliage, but in looking at that picture, I'm wondering if it was struck by lightning.
Yeah, it's...
it almost looks like lightning.
Yeah.
Because it's at least 6 feet long and goes from the trunk all the way down to the ground. It could be lightning injury. If it was just a smaller area, then I would think maybe squirrels or other critters use the bark to, you know, make their nests. I know they do that with arborvitae.
Yeah.
But in this situation, it really does look like it could potentially be lightning injury. And plants, again, they don't heal. They close their wounds. We heal our wounds on us, but trees actually close the wounds. And that will take years to develop, you know, new callus tissue to close it. But if the rest of the tree, if the tree looks okay, again, I would just leave it, cut off any jagged edges that are sticking out, but the tree will naturally form callus tissue and close those wounds.
All right. Phil in Mount Horeb has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Phil.
Hi. I have a large number of tribute and heritage ever-bearing red raspberries, and they have been within 25 feet of the base of some large walnuts. I thought that they would bear because the black caps do, but apparently these domesticated don't. And I would like to move them, and I'm wondering about moving them in the spring and how I should do that, when. And also, have these plants been damaged by the juglone and the walnuts? Are they going to ever bear again?
Good question. We do have a fact sheet on the Wisconsin Extension Horticulture website, that hort.extension.wisc.edu website. And I can't remember if blackberry or raspberry was susceptible, so I'm looking that information up for you. See, sensitive to juglone, looking up, yeah, blackberry and most other berries.
Red raspberries, these are.
Yeah, they are very susceptible to juglone. And the thing is, if you have a black walnut tree, those roots grow way out into the soil. They don't go into the ground like a carrot. And so what happens is you've got, say your tree's 100 feet tall, the root spread of that can easily be up to 300 feet or more away from the trunk of the tree. So planting it on a different side of the house, the blackberries, and I would do it before it leaves out. I would dig the plants up and move them when they're dormant, when they haven't leafed out. And granted, the ground is frozen now. You can't do it now. But, the black walnut toxicity is a big problem with a lot of plants.
And you'd almost have to knock the soil off the roots before.
Yes. You need to bare root it. So a good way to do that is dig the whole plant up and then get it on the actual ground and then take a hose on low volume and gently get that soil off of that root system, because there's juglone, probably fine roots of the black walnut in that soil you want to get rid of. Do it on a shady day, not a full sun day. Again, do it before it leaves out.
All right. Good luck, Phil. Thank you. John in Herbster, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing. What's on your mind?
Choke cherries. We planted choke cherries about 4 years ago as a, hoping for a smaller shrub and something to feed the birds. And my first question is, how long does it take them to bear fruit? And my second question is, when to prune them? When I looked up pruning, it says you should prune them after they flowered, and that's going to be probably June up here. And I'm wondering if we can't do it a little bit earlier without compromising the flowering and the berry production.
Okay, if you're pruning, is it choke berry or choke cherry?
Cherry.
Okay, choke cherry is a tree. It's not a shrub. If it's choke berry, what color are the fruit?
They're purplish.
Yeah, it's choke cherry, and that's a prunus species, and they develop into smaller trees, and they sucker profusely from the base, but those need to be far away from a house. If it was choke berry, which is an aronia species, that is a shrub. If you're pruning right after it's done flowering, you're removing the fruit because those flowers develop into fruit. So in terms of pruning, you want to do it after it's done fruiting. Or I like the dormant season. I recommend dormant season. Choke cherry, the prunus, is really susceptible to a lot of insects and diseases. It's a native plant, but it is very susceptible, especially to black knot, which is a nasty-looking disease. As Brian Huddleston, the disease expert, Dr. Brian Huddleston is the disease diagnostic person at the UW-Wisconsin Disease Clinic, Plant mm-hmm. Disease Clinic. Anyways, he calls it poop on a stick. And it's almost like an ID feature for choke berries. I've never seen one that didn't have it. And they're short-lived. And that once you start seeing that black color on the actual twigs and large branches, it looks like poop on a stick. It's swelling, and it looks real gnarly. That has to be pruned out at least 8 inches below where that black knot is. And I mention this because you're going to run into it with choke cherries. And again, don't prune it right after it's done flowering because you're removing the fruit.
All right.
Flowers develop fruit.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it. Cheryl in Verona. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was listening to that brief conversation about black walnuts and the jungular product that it puts out of its roots. We were looking at some Wisconsin Heritage Plus native trees to plant. One was butternut that's on the list. And I was wondering, it's in that same family, if that has the same issue with that same...
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Okay. And I don't recommend planting butternut. We have a disease that has wiped out most of the butternuts in Wisconsin. Yes, there are still some around, but they get to a certain size, and they get what's called butternut canker. And butternut canker is lethal. That's why we don't see very many butternuts around anymore. And when we do find them, it's like, oh, wonderful. But... I would not recommend planting it for most people because they won't know about the disease. We do have fact sheets on butternut canker. It is in the same family, the Jugland ACA family, as black walnut. It's also a Jugland species, and it produces just as much of that Juglone as a black walnut. I would suggest planting other native trees. I shy away from maples only because we have so many in the landscape right now. We did the same thing with elms and ash, and we had overpopulation of elms and ash, and sure enough, we've had insects and diseases that has really done a horrible disservice to our urban forestry with maples in particular. Other native plants, I'm a big fan of musselwood. I'm a big fan of I know the scientific names, but that's not going to help people. The American hop hornbeam, which is an Ostraea species, that's another good one. Kentucky coffee tree is a great one.
I do have, personally, I have a sugar maple and a river birch in my yard. I love river birch, but again, the soil needs to be acidic for that one, or it will get chlorosis. But there's many, many trees to choose from.
Good luck, Cheryl. Thank you. Let's go to Dave in Middleton. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Larry. Long-time listener here, so I appreciate you guys always doing your shows here. I recently purchased about 10 acres kind of outside of Middleton, and it's native forest. But I'm looking for kind of a fact or fiction here because it has probably 80-year-old red oak trees on it about every 10 yards.
Nice.
And they are monsters. But I did hear that they do have a life expectancy, which I was kind of shocked to hear with oaks. So I just wanted to hear that response on whether or not I should maybe foresee them coming down in the next 10, 20 years or whatever your thoughts are on that.
This is a great question. Normally, there's two groups of native oaks. There's the white oak group and the red oak group, and there's a lot of different species that fall under each group. The white oak group oaks can live 400 to 600 years. The red oak group oaks, if they're not infected with oak wilt or chestnut borer, they can live, you know, several hundred years. Now, I worry that you have so many red oaks. Red oak group oaks, they get oak wilt, they're dead. It's a horrible disease. It plugs up the vascular tissue, so water can't get from the roots to the top of the tree, and the tree dies within 2 years. It's horrible death. Having a certified arborist come out to your site and look at those trees, I would really encourage you, because they are going to determine, first of all, if you have any trees that have oak wilt, they need to be taken out now, because that in the springtime, the plant itself, those fungal mats will be there and can spread oak wilt to healthy trees. And it's usually the picnic beetle that transfers it, and they're attracted to fresh wounds or even cracks in the bark of healthy trees. Yeah. And that could infect your trees. Also, root grafts. They spread by grafting of the roots underground from a red oak to a red oak. And that's another way. So I suggest you contact a certified arborist. Again, go to the Wisconsin Arborist Association website and look it up, and have someone come out and look at your trees. I would hate for you to lose your big, beautiful red oaks. What a great tree.
It is a great tree. And it's been a great show, Laura. Thank you very much for...
We're done. Oh, wow. That went quick.
It went quick. We'll look forward to your next visit. Thank you again.
Laura, thank you, Larry.
Laura Jowell is an associate professor, extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. Always great to have her with us. Jesse LeGrue is back on Monday to talk about how to help make technology more accessible to those who are less tech savvy. That's Monday starting at 11 on the Ideas Network. And next week, we'll talk about growing plants in greenhouses on Garden Talk. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mehler.